please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Tina R. from the Great Fact Group in Neptune, New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Tina. I'm an alcoholic. That was quick. There's usually a lot more in our meetings at home. That's really quick. I was just doing my praying and hoping that, you know, God would take over because it's not about me. And congratulations on your 1 year. I did not sound like that or look like that with 1 year sober at all. So you're doing good. I'm from the Great Fact in Neptune, New Jersey. I live in Belmar, New Jersey. My sobriety date is 9/18/04, and I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I'm on my fourth sponsor, and I recently went through the steps again. So I am actually from Pennsylvania originally. I grew up in Hatfield, Lansdale area, and then my parents, well, my parents are divorced, but my mom moved to Quakertown. So I was, when I got asked to speak in Quakertown, I was like, okay, I guess I'll sleep over. I'm just staying tonight. So it's good to be here, and I see people that were here the first time that I tried to get sober. And I remember at that time, getting like a few weeks sober, and suddenly I was back to tough girl, you know, and I came late and I left early. My voice is shaky and I'm not nervous. It's going to be shaky throughout. I can't help it. So that's what happened the first time I got sober. So I remember promising my family that I wasn't going to become one of them, you know, because you guys made me nervous. I never wanted to be around somebody who didn't drink and party. It was just very uncomfortable. So growing up, I was very early on painfully shy. I was so shy. And I just wanted to – I was an isolator from the get-go. I just really would like to have gone unnoticed. And most of my life was like that. And from a very early age, I knew that my parents – this area and everything on the outside was the problem. So as soon as I could, I was out because I could go somewhere and be whatever I wanted to be, become who I wanted to be. And I don't, you know, my first few drinks were, they weren't even drinks. When my dad would give me sips of his beer, it wasn't like I got that feeling. And we know what that feeling is. It was more like, oh, I can do what adults do. You know, and that's all that it mattered to me. But my first time that I actually went to drink purposely, I drank to get drunk. I never understood from the get-go why somebody would have a beer or a drink. Why wouldn't I, if I was going to drink something, I just don't get that idea. Alcohol is to get drunk. That's how I think. And I didn't really want to get drunk either. Drunk was halfway. Blackout, not be here, that was done. That was a good night. So when I found alcohol, that painfully shy girl, I don't know if I became not shy, but I didn't care, you know? Because growing up, you guys all had an answer and knew something that I didn't know, you know? And I just couldn't figure it out. How do you get through things? You know, and why aren't you always crying like I am? You know, and I was so sad as a kid. And when I found alcohol, I found my solution. It's what I needed. But the thing is, when I wasn't drinking, I was back to shy. So remember that at a very early age, I decided I was out of here because all my externals were my problem. So the day I graduated high school, I got on, I think I was in North Wales or something, and I got on, there's a train there, right? I don't even remember all of it. I ended up in Florida. And I kind of skip over a little bit, and then I go back and forth, but I think it all comes together. When I first came in, when I got here and I was serious, I was told to maybe write a list of where God might have played a part in my life when I needed to find, you know, a higher power or come to believe. And when I was living in Florida, this is one of the times that stands out for me. I got a job at something that's similar to a Denny's here. It's called Wags there. And I'm not waitress material. So I get this job, and I'm so proud because I'm going to make it there, and I'm going to be who I want to be. I call my parents, and I said, I now live in Florida, and I'm living on the beach outside. I don't care. I'm going to make it. And I was not brave. I was a runner. And so I get this job, and then I find a cute little apartment, a.k.a. crack hotel. I had no idea because I was 17. And I'm working on Federal Highway, and I'm making it, you know. So I get this place. You can pay weekly. You could probably pay hourly, but I paid weekly. And I'm walking up and down Federal Highway, and I remember this night. I'm 17. And I was really proud of myself, you know, I was going to do this. And some guy pulls over and says, are you working? And I said, yes, I am. Like, and then it hit me that I might not be in, like, the safest place. And that's one of the things where I was like, wow, you know, I look at my niece now, and I'm like, that's just crazy. And so many things for the next almost 20 years. I made it through so many things, and I'm blessed. I'm blessed to be here, and so many people don't make it, and when somebody asks me to speak, I don't care where, or when someone asks me to sponsor them, I don't care what it takes. The answer is yes. My primary purpose is to stay sober and to help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. I'm going to explain to you right now because it sounds bad tonight. Can I have my water? Sorry. you can get through anything in this program with these steps. My voice sounds like this because I'm a survivor of throat cancer 2 years ago. I need to explain that because it kind of goes in and out, and it doesn't bother me. It's gone. It's over. But I did get through it. And stuff like that, talk about close to God. Oh, my God. When there's nothing else you can go to. There's a lot of things that no human power can relieve you of. There really is. And I've been there a few times. So anyway, back to Florida. So I meet some people down there, and kind of the same way I was here, I was there. Can you believe it? Like, I don't believe it. So I'm shy again, and I'm meeting people, and I'm fun when I'm drunk. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't even know. It was fun sometimes, I'm not going to lie. You know, it definitely, I had some good times. I had some bad times, real bad times. And so I'm there maybe a year and a half, and I meet a guy. And we fall in love in like a week. And he lives there 6 months out of the year, and in Boston 6 months out of the year. I'm like, and he has these business cards, and he's like, wooing me, and he drives a Corvette, and I'm like, wow, this guy is awesome. So he leaves, and then we're flying back and forth to see each other, so I move to Boston. And we get married, and I'm with him for 11 years. And that 11 years was, I remember, this is so funny, usually people would remember a section where they had like bouts with alcohol and like cocaine or pills and stuff. I remember like 3 or 4 months where I didn't, you know, it's like, how did I do that? So that was what that relationship was like. He partied like I did, and sometimes he would say, I'm not doing that tonight, and I would say, well, I am, and then he'd say, well, all right, you know, and for a while in my sobriety, I felt guilty, but, you know, I'm good. He's a big boy, and I was a big girl, And about our ninth year, I knew that there was a problem. You know, it's like, what is the problem? We need to have a kid, you know. But we really shouldn't have a kid. At least I had some kind of, I don't know what. It was God for that kid, you know, that doesn't exist. So I figured maybe we should just test the waters and become big brothers and big sisters or something. But it was like, no. So I remember actually having this discussion. We were on Tremont Street in Boston, you know, and it was snowing. And I was about to run in and score. Drugs are a part of my story. I won't get into them too much. But so we're talking about the changes that need to be made. Never bringing up drugs and alcohol. I get out of the car, run upstairs, get what we need, come back out. I'm like, do you think of anything? You know, and it's like, I never made that connection. You know, I just, well, they were my answer. They couldn't be the problem. I would change anything. I gave up everything in my life for drugs and alcohol. I'm divorced. I gave up the house. I gave up everything. I gave up my job of 13 years. I gave up everything. And I didn't think twice about it. There was no, maybe I shouldn't do this. There wasn't. There was no question. I remember thinking at the end of my relationship with him, maybe I need to spend more time with my friends. So, my girlfriends. Because we were always together and we needed some space or something. So, I went out with them a lot. And me and my girlfriends went to a lot of bike weeks. That's what going out with my girlfriends was. It was like, I meet women now, and it's like, that's not what we do, you know? And it's like, so I fell in love while I was married, but I left for a while. I needed to find myself and found the perfect guy, right, at Bike Week in Laconia, New Hampshire. And he was part of a club. And he was married as well, and he was a drug dealer. Does it get any better than that? I'm like, right? So now I got to get out of this. My husband's, you know, watching, monitoring, this and that. I don't need it. You know, I don't need it. So I end up, you know, it took some time, but I left my husband, and I ended up in this nice little hole of an apartment. All my friends kept saying, I can't keep watching you do this to yourself, I can't keep taking care of you. I was a heavy burden. I truly was. And I thought I was fun. And there were so many days I woke up, I didn't know who was talking to me. I didn't know what I did. I didn't want to know. And I woke up and read about myself in the paper. It's like, I don't ever want to go there again. I don't. That feeling of the next day, and it's in our book, that quicksand stretching out all around us, and it's like there's no way out. I truly thought that there was no way out. And the more I thought about it, the uncontrollable brain, I needed a drink. So what started out for me as Friday and Saturday night, because that's normal drinking. I never drank normally, by the way. Turned into Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I noticed if you watch football, or at least if it was on the TV, you could drink on Sundays. So, and I hate football, so I would always like have it on mute, but it was on. It's like, I'm watching football, what's up? It was like, I just don't even, I can't even stand the sound of it now. And then it was, I couldn't. Thursday were big. They were big nights to go out, like after work, happy hour, or whatever. And I remember everybody at the office. This is still in my mid-20s. They'd go out with me, and then towards the end, it was like, you want to go have a drink? And they were like, you don't have a drink. You don't know how to have a drink. So I ended up, everything was by myself. I was alone in the end, totally alone. So I'm still with this guy, and it is just, like, ridiculously dangerous. And I remember, you know, he was part of a motorcycle club, and I do remember, like I said, you know, I have flashbacks of certain times, because my life is a bit foggy. I remember one of his friends, members, named Beef, telling me I had a problem. And I was like, oh, my God, I have somebody in this club telling me I have a problem. I don't know where else to go from here, you know? It's like, At this point, I'm physically so addicted to everything. Everything. And I don't even know if I want out. I didn't want to die. I used to think I wanted to die. I didn't want to die. I was still in here somewhere. I could feel it sometimes. Otherwise, I wouldn't have cared. You know, I wouldn't have felt guilty. I wouldn't have cared. But I was still in here somewhere. That's the God in me. You know, I knew something. I just didn't know any way out. And I knew about AA. But I didn't. This is not where I wanted to be. I just so didn't want to be here. I wanted to start to control it. And I can't say again because I never did. I never did. It's like, maybe I'll grow out of it. But I thought I was going to grow out of it while I was married. Or maybe I'll have a kid and I'll grow out of it. I still even knew I couldn't take that chance, not for a kid. And so I just kept waiting, and it wasn't happening, and it was getting worse. It was really getting worse. And so now I'm about 30, and things were getting even more dangerous. And there's, again, that list of where God was in my life, you know. This guy that I was with, we were in a car one night, and we were usually on a motorcycle, but he got mad at me, so he drove straight into head-on traffic. Okay, and seriously, the only thing that crossed my mind was, I hope my bottle doesn't break. Swear. And it was midwinter in Boston, and it was really icy, and we were in a hilly area, and I was wearing heels, and I just remember getting out and grabbing my bottle and running. That's all I cared about. I didn't care about anything else, not the other people, nothing. I was just going to make it home, and I had what I needed. It was my answer. And so when that all started to fall apart, obviously it was dangerous, I decided to come home. This would be home, where my mom lives. Wherever my mom moves, by the way, is home. So I decided to come home, and I was going to get a grip on this. So I did. I came home, and I never went back to Boston. I've been back since, but I never went back. And at this point of my drinking, of my entire life, I couldn't go outside anymore by myself. I found a cab driver who took me to work and to the liquor store. That's where I went. That's it. And then this guy would bring me whatever I needed, or I'd go out with him occasionally, but I really didn't go outside anymore. I was afraid if the mailman came, I would, like, oh my God, it was like a horror film, you know? It was like I'd run and hide. I couldn't be seen. I couldn't look anybody in the eye. I was done. You know, there was no more me. I was like, oh my God. So I ended up getting on a train and making it home. And I only saw my family now and then. It's hard when you live in another state, you know, and I did the best I could to dress it up when I came home, but those days were over. So when they saw me, they were like, what happened to you? You know, like I said, drugs were a part of my story. To get pills or whatever, I would go to dentists, have them pull my teeth. After 6 months, it hurt so bad. And then they were like, we can't find anything. And I was like, we'll just pull it. I did whatever it took to get what I thought I needed, because I really thought I just might disintegrate if I didn't get these things. I was in a lot of pain. And I couldn't face it. And I did. I often said, you know, God, help me. But I didn't think that that would really get answered, you know, because I didn't really have a God in my life. And I was nervous about that when I came in here because I didn't know anything about religion. So I didn't know anything about the program. I also didn't know anything about alcoholism. I just truly thought I was a loser. And so if I can't do something perfectly, I'm not doing it. So I was like, well, I don't know anything about God, and if I can't do all this perfectly, I didn't know the religion, I didn't know all the stories, the Bible by heart, whatever. I found out I didn't need any of that, you know. And I found out I didn't have to be perfect. And so when I came home, I ended up staying with my mom for a couple months, and I had some money, and that was too much for her, and I saw it, and they never had to say it, but I saw it. My time there was done. I was breaking hearts, and I never knew that before. I was tearing them up. Then I stayed with my sister, and then I went with my other sister because I could tell when the time was up, when I was getting that look of pity, like, we don't know what to do with you. Because what I would do, God bless you, is leave money outside the bedroom I was staying. I could no longer even see them. And they would put a bottle there because they didn't know how else to go about it. They didn't know what to do with me because I got very, very ill if I didn't have it. And I remember picking up the bottle one day, and under it said, just please take a shower. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm so vain. What happened to me? Like, if somebody needs to tell me to take a shower, and then I looked at myself, and I was like, oh, my God. And I didn't know what happened, you know. And my sister convinced me to go take a look at a rehab, and I said, okay. I was on a Thursday, and they could get me in Friday or Monday. Do you know when I went? I was going to have one more good time in that bedroom, okay? So I went on Monday, and I was in detox, and I don't remember those days. I slept it off, and I was there to get a grip. I was there to learn how to drink on Fridays and Saturdays again. If I only got in trouble once a month, twice a month, big trouble, I'd still be drinking. I know me. I can handle that. I had to be beaten down, and I was. And I remember the first day they said, yeah, you're leaving detox and you're going into the rehab. And I was like, there were people in there. I hadn't said a word sober in over 2 years. Not a word. I didn't even know how to say hello. I cried. I cried past a year at everything. I had no idea how to live, you know, and I was so guilt-ridden and filled with shame. And what had my life become? 2 days later, after being like, I can't go in that room, suddenly I'm tough. There's that fear, driven by 100 forms of fear. Well, I'm not strong, so I have to act tough. Okay, so I'm like, I got to get out of here. I have a job in Boston. I didn't even know how much time had passed. They're like, no, you don't. You know, and then, you know, I had nothing. I had nothing. And I had to get out of there every day. I had to get out of here. I have to get out of here. After 30-something days, they said, you're going to leave. And I was like, I can't leave, you know. And then I was like, well, I'm not going to go to a meeting for a while. I need a break. And I was there that night, and I said, I think I can do this. And I did for a little while. I skated through, you know, and nothing was changing. And then I actually needed to take Percocet for something. I know now I didn't need to. But I found another solution, right? So I have about a year, and that is not working, this program. It's coming. And trying to look like I have 10 years when I have, you know, less than a year, and looking like I have it all together. And I just wanted you to think I was okay, and I also needed you to like me. But I couldn't let you get to know me. I'm all I got. What if you don't like me? So, you know, I went back out because my next solution was a pill a day. Then it was 2 pills a day. And I knew I couldn't drink. And then it was 90 pills a day. And the cops were coming every morning because I had like 8 alarm clocks going off, and I was living down the Keys at this point. And they were like, your neighbors think you're dead. And I'm like, oops, you know. And they were going off for hours, you know. And I can't believe I'm not dead. But I don't think I should be. I think I should be standing right here. So I am so blessed. So when I finally came back home, which was back here again, and my parents were like, oh, my God. And I cannot tell you where I went. I have flashbacks. I was in mental institutions, other rehabs. I was in many different places, and I remember passing. The obsession was just so absolutely great. I jumped out of a car that my mother was driving because we passed a Chinese restaurant, and I needed the scorpion bowl. And, I mean, I had no money. You know, she comes in afterwards. She's like, what are you, you know, and my mom's not soft, you know, so she's like, what are you doing? And I can't imagine what it felt like, you know, to be her, to watch her daughter go through this. I can't. And I didn't understand it either, because I kind of was like, you have that healthy mind and you have the diseased mind, but I fed that diseased mind for so long that there was only bits and pieces of that healthy mind still left. And I wondered what I was doing. And I didn't look, because I couldn't help it, you know? I couldn't stop. And I didn't know what would happen if I did. I mean, what would happen? It would just be me. So I came back into the program. Somebody from the Keys drove up here and said, I know some people down in Jersey, and they're sober, and I think you should go down there and stay with them. And I said, I have nothing. You know, I have the clothes on my back. I'm homeless. I have nothing. He said, you don't need anything. I was like, oh, my God. I don't know where I'm going. That's how bad it was. I went. So I don't know what I'm getting into, and I just went. It was like it was over for me. That was my surrender. I am going to point out, there's somebody that lives here. Her name is Janice. I don't know if she's here tonight. My last drink, actually, was at my mom's, and I drank everything that there was, and there was nothing left except hairspray. And I was in the powder room downstairs, and I was about to drink the hairspray. And there's a woman named Janice that I had heard the first time I was in here, and she drank something, and I remember hearing her talk. And I was like, I'm going to die if I drink something like this. And it was from, you know, the first time I was sober, hearing her. And I've seen her since, and I told her that she had played a huge part in getting me sober, because I looked in the mirror and I said, when are you going to stop? And I went to a meeting that night, and then my friend came, brought me to Jersey. And I've been sober since. And so, you know, that was obviously on my God list too, you know, and it was amazing to see her. I saw her last time I was here in the summer. And so I come in, and this is in Jersey, and I'm going to the Shorelawn Club, and it's in Belmar. I live in Belmar too. And I remember people putting their hands up, you know, 7 days, I have 14 days. I was like, 14 days? Jesus, I don't know how I'm going to get that, you know, 14 days. So I'm doing this totally a day at a time. It's like just going through the motions, and I am in so much pain, but I'm able to do it somehow. I was scared to death of everything, but the obsession to drink was no longer there. And I was amazed, you know, and I know I didn't do that. I don't have that power. So I came in, and I wasn't doing what I did the last time. I had had it. I had tried everything, and it was over for me. So whatever you told me to do, I was doing it to get a smile on my face. I remember wondering, after years of not laughing, if I'd ever laugh again. And laughter is, like, so important to me. So I came in, and like I said, I've been through the steps a few times, and the first couple times, I thought step one was so easy for me to get. You know, clearly I was powerless over alcohol, and clearly my life was unmanageable. And then I thought about it, you know, after a couple years sober, it took me 20-something years to get that. You know, 20-something years of trying to eat before I drank, trying to drink something different, trying to not start until this time, trying to not drink on these days, trying to mix it with this, trying to mix it with that, whatever. That's what it took for me to get it, that I was powerless. I was not easy, you know. I didn't want to stop. It was my best friend, and I did grieve it. And when I was faced with whether or not a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, the only problem I had with that was I was never sane. If sane means soundness of mind, I was never sane, you know. So I did not get my life back here. I got a life. I got who I am today. I got the ability to stand up here tonight and speak to you. I couldn't do this. I was always, you know, acting like someone else, like whoever you wanted me to be. Or what will they like? I'll act like that. Or the airhead. Or the whatever it is. And I sold my soul for people to like me. I truly did. And I don't need to do that. And one of the greatest things I found out also was that nothing out here has to change in order for me to be okay. I mean, there's nothing better than that. Nothing. So the third step is all day, every day for me. And there's nothing better than that. I mean, what a relief. You know, I wake up and it's my nature to be negative, you know, and that is slowly over the years changing. And nobody ever really gets to see the negativity in me because my morning ritual is I'm extremely rigid with this program. And I actually asked one of my sponsees the other day, I said, I think I got a little softer though over the years. And she's like, really? But maybe not. But I take it seriously. I take it so seriously. It's life or death. Like I said, I've had four sponsors. My first sponsor I picked, and she laughed a lot, and she was, I love AA, and she would tell me where to go to meetings, but we never really got together, and we never really did any work, and she never mentioned the book. And then she went out, and then she was dead. And what a lesson, because I did not think this was life or death. I really didn't. And I drove to Cape May to make sure it was her dead because I couldn't believe it. I was like, she was sober for 13 years. She's only been out of meetings for a very short period of time, and she was gone. And I just was staring, and I was like, oh, my God, it's not a joke, you know, and I might not come back. And so with my third step and my morning ritual, I do my meditations, and I write a letter to God every single day. And no, I do not dwell on the past, and no morbid reflection, but I do pick a day that I remember, and it's usually in the morning, one of those mornings that I had. And how can I have a bad day today if it's not like that? I really don't know what a bad day is anymore. I don't. I think I have a bad day. And then somebody says, will you sleep? And I have to remember those days where I just thank God every day. I don't have to wake up, wonder who I'm going to steal from, wonder who I'm going to manipulate, which doctors I have to go to, who's not talking to me, who's that? None of that. Like, I don't have to do that anymore. And it's like, my life is so easy these days, you know? And if I read 86 to 88 every day, you know, and I am divorced from self-pity. I'm done. And every single day, my mom calls me Stuart Smalley. I write an affirmation list, and the first thing I write is I am sober. And it's the truth. I am sober. And I'm still amazed every day when I write that. I cannot believe it. Because I couldn't go an hour. And I'm not only sober, but I'm reliable, I'm responsible, I show up, I'm compassionate, and I really don't know what I used to think about. It must have just been, how am I going to get what I need? What about me? You know? And, oh, you don't like me? Well, what can I do? You know, me, you know? And if I think about me, I'm not going to be all right. You know, if this was about me tonight, I wouldn't be able to give you any kind of message. I'd be wondering, how's my hair? What are they thinking of me? You know, it's not about me. It's not about me. I was basically saved and reborn through this program. I got to do my fourth step, which I was eager to do because I was done carrying it around. You know, I was nervous. But admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being, I had a problem admitting it to myself. I had a real problem when I saw that on paper. if I read that, that was about somebody else, I'd be like, ooh, I'm not going to hang out with them. But that was me. And it was okay, though. I also felt like, and then I did my fifth, and I felt like I was actually in the program. You know, I was doing some work. I was going home, and I was doing this work, and I was doing the stuff I needed to do, and I was starting to feel a little relief, you know? And it's clear to me why 6 and 7 are where they are, you know, because what I realized after I did my 4th and 5th was I did think it was going to be like, boom, done, it's over, 6, 7, thanks, now I'm good. And now I'm like 6, 7, 6, 7 all day. 3, 6, 7, and I'm like 3, 6, 7, 11. It's like, oh, my God. So, but it's good, you know, I have all these tools. I don't have to use anything to be okay other than this spiritual program. It's great. So when I did my fifth step, there was one thing that made me the devil. And it was something I did before I ever picked up a drink. And that was my hardest stuff. I had no problem telling you what I did when I was after drinking. Those nights, they were crazy nights. I had no problem. It's the stuff I do that makes me, my character defects, jealousy, sloth. It's all like, you know, the real me. I don't need a drink to bring my character defects out. You know, my life is unmanageable, drunk or sober, if I don't get help. I need this program, and I need a higher power. So, like I said, 6 and 7 is so major in my life, but the first time I do remember, you know, I had that hour, and then I was like, you know, and then we did the 7th step prayer, and then I was on to 8 and 9, you know, we're moving right through this. And it did twist me a little bit because I was like, why am I still acting like that? I saw it. I did 6 and 7, and, like, it should be gone, cast out. It said cast out. It's still here. What's going on, you know? But it's okay today. I work on it. I continuously work on it, but I don't beat myself up. That was what I was doing wrong. 4 is not an exercise in beating yourself up. It's getting honest. It's finding out who you are. I needed to know who I was. Because if you don't know what the problem is, it can't even be fixed. If you can't even look. And I actually, I've been speaking a lot lately. I think God's keeping me busy, keeping me out of trouble. But last night was on the 5th step, and it said something about a self-appraisal is insufficient, which is hysterical, because I don't even know when I'm lying to myself. You know, it's like, oh, no, I did it because of this. And they're like, no, you know. And I'm usually pretty good at it because I sponsor other women. My saving grace. That is my saving grace. That's when my life took off, when I walked somebody else through these steps. So 8 and 9. 9 is like, it's like they say when the fog lifts, the fog is still lifting and lifting and lifting, and I'm learning more of what's appropriate and what's not and how people actually feel when things happen. And it's like, I realize sometimes when I say things to somebody, it's like, what if somebody said that to you? You know, and it's like, oh, my God. So lately I've been, like, thinking, what if you were just on videotape? How would you like that scene? And I'm like, no, I wouldn't, you know, and 6 and 7. And it's like, okay. So, and I don't know how you can really be in this program and working this program and doing what we're supposed to be doing and not doing all of the steps all of the time. Somehow they're going to work themselves into your life. And we practice these principles in all our affairs. I cannot be perfect. And for so long I tried. 10 is just, I mean, every night I do. I also read 86 at night when we retire. You know, it's just, I need things to be pretty cut and dried for me. I need to keep it simple. I don't. Oh, for so long. Why? When did this happen? You know, it doesn't even matter. What mattered was, that's where I was, and there is a solution. That's what I needed to know, and that was the only choice I have. I don't have a choice of whether or not I'm going to drink again. If I stop coming here and I stop working this program and I leave, I'm going to drink again. I drink when I'm not working these steps and I don't have a higher power. That's what I do. So 11, I've gotten really, really much better at my meditation. Prayer has, at first I was like iffy about it. I felt funny. You know, I had to create my own God because I didn't have a clue. I knew that there was one. Certainly not working in my life. Certainly not invited in my life because, first of all, he was busy. Second of all, I'm in trouble if he is here. And I needed to get with the fact that it's much bigger than I'm ever really going to understand. But to the extent that I can understand it, he's loving. He's understanding. He's gotten me here. And now, again, my primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. I never had a purpose, ever. And 12, carrying this message. I do speak often lately. Like, I don't know why. I'm sure that there's a reason. But I was taught, you know, first of all, before my sponsors would go through the work with me, first, are you willing to go to any lengths to get sober? Yes. Yes, I am. Don't even care what you're going to ask me to do. I might give you a hard time about it a little bit, but especially the more sober I get, because I know what I'm doing, you know. And, you know, I get humble pie. I don't like humble pie. But I get to the place where I am, again, willing to take whatever they're going to give me. The next question was, all I ask of you, and this is what I ask all my sponsees, is that when we are done, you will take someone else through this work. This way. You give your time. Because if you think about saying no because you don't have enough me time is going to get you in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know? Too much of it. You need some. Okay. But I want you to, and this is what I tell them, remember those days. Remember those mornings that you woke up and there was no way out. You had no answer other than, where am I going to get the next one? And there was so much pain, shame, and guilt. And you didn't even exist really anymore. You were a shell of a person walking around mean and nasty to everybody, acting like someone you weren't, driven by 100 forms of fear, and sick, very sick. And then tell someone, no, you don't have time. You find the time. That's how I feel, and that's what I have my sponsees promise me. I mean, we're not ridiculous, you know, but I have a huge network of women, men and women. But I, you know, initially came in and didn't really want to go to women's meetings. You were not easily manipulated by me. And you actually wanted a little bit of honesty, which I wasn't up for that at first either. So, but it didn't take me long, you know, because I knew what happened the first time, you know, and I knew I was going to, I didn't even know I was going to make it. I really didn't. And this is what I tell newcomers. This is what I was afraid of, the ability to get up here and carry the message. That is finishing my 12th step. My 12th step is not done until I have taken someone else through the work and carried the message. That's what I've been taught. You know, it's learning how to do the work, getting clean, getting cleansed, pulling out all the crap, dumping it, asking for it to be removed, finding God right here. It's not even external. It's right here. It's good and it's truth. And then showing someone else how to do that. Primary purpose. You know, I know you have a job. I know you have all these things. I'm not asking you to give up your life. We're not a glum lot. We have a good time. But you'll figure it out, you know. And I just really insist on that for my sponsees because I know what it did for me. It gave me a life, and I'm so happy, you know. We can live long and happy is what we're told. You know, I don't want to be here and be unhappy. And I'm only like that if I'm doing something wrong. And if I can't tell everybody what I'm doing, I should not be doing that, you know. And I'm not willing to take a U-turn, which was what prompted me to do my last set of steps. I was like, oh, my God. you know, I did do something that I couldn't tell everybody I was doing. I went on this, it's so not a big deal. Went on the wrong kind of date. So it was like, this guy I knew was no good for me. I see red flags all over the place. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go. And I'm not going to discuss this with anybody. And I'm just going to do what I want to do. You know, and it's like, well, isn't that what you used to do? And when I feel old behaviors coming up, I get nervous. You know, I get scared. Fear doesn't keep me sober, but it gets me back into the program. And so does pain. Pain will get me back in the steps again, too, if I, you know, start falling short. So, like I said, about 2 years ago, I, the life I have now, a great life, you know, and I'm like, the hardest part of my life, I think it's over, you know. And I got diagnosed with cancer. And I was pretty pissed, you know. I was like, I'm doing everything that I thought I was supposed to do. And that's how I learned that, you know, we come in here and we get better, but life still happens. And you can deal with life on life's terms. But I will tell you that there's no way I could have done that without this program and without my higher power, who I continuously thanked daily for the cancer, because I knew it was going to give me something more. Because all that other pain gave me so much. I didn't know what it was going to be, but I knew it was going to be something good. You know, it might be for somebody else. It didn't matter. I was taught to say thank you. I was taught to be grateful, and I was. Kind of comical, the kind of cancer I got, because I could not talk. So I was like, are you kidding me? Yeah, that was really hard. And I couldn't talk. I couldn't drive. I couldn't do anything for myself, you know, and I needed a lot of help, and I needed a lot of faith, you know. And it was also really scary for me because, not to be gross, but the whole front of my neck was burnt off. So I had to take something, and I was really scared. You know, I was more scared of having to take anything for pain than I was of the cancer, because that could be fixed. I was not sure if I took anything that I could ever stop, you know. So I was watched. Everything was given to me by, you know, my network. I was really taken care of. And it's gone, and I made it through. And not a month later, I get a call from someone in the program. I think, well, they think I have thyroid cancer. Can you help me? It's like, are you kidding me? It's so clear sometimes if you have the right perception, if you have the right attitude, if you're open to seeing where God works in your life. It's everywhere. It's everywhere for me. And I'm so blessed. And my time is just about up. So thank you so much.